Are you a big brain of the beautiful game? Prove it with the great new app that'll test your football knowledge to the limit. Name That Player. Download the Name That Player app today and race against the clock to identify the Premier League players purely from a list of the clubs they've played for. Put your football knowledge to the ultimate test with the Name That Player app. Available right now for iOS and Android from the App Store and Google Play. Name That Player. Can you beat the best?
Shoot the defence, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
That should be a club legend. It's just totally disrespectful. And like I say, it's just a lack of respect, lack of class. And I hope we get relegated and liquidated.
Jan, do you want to do that voice of your barber so we can guess which nationality he is?
Are you ready?
Sounds like a really bad porno, mate.
And the fact that we had now taken our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable. And with very young players, so it was...
Yeah, but I've seen misses, like, you
but
know...
But that wasn't a miss.
Misses, what he misses, he stopped his mate from scoring it.
Hello, welcome to a very special edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel, and the reason why this episode is rather special is because I'm joined by a good friend of mine and a gentleman that's been on this show before. He is an esports fanatic, he's an esports expert, and he knows a lot about Belgian football. It is Dory, Mr. Dory, my friend. How you doing, geezer?
I'm fine, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, my friend. I'm good. I was going to try and do a bit of French for my intro, but I was going to mess it up. I was going to go, you know, I don't know, comment ça va, mon ami, but yeah.
Ça va, vous?
don't start, because I mince my words. I only did French at GCSE level, man. I'm basic, you know.
It's all right. I'm Dutch speaking, but I know a little bit of French, so I can wing myself into having a French conversation too.
But you speak a lot of languages, though, don't you? Because you speak Flemish, you speak Dutch, you speak Moroccan. Is it?
Yeah,
Moroccan?
It's Berber, but yeah. French, German too.
French, bloody hell. And this is just is this self-taught or a?
Nah, school. Like mainly from school, but I see a lot of people that just can't get their hands onto or like wrap their minds around the language. But for me, it goes rather easy, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Like fifth year, we got like French for the first time, and I felt like the others had a lot of struggles with it. But I was listening to French music, so I've got everything very fast, and like the way of building a sentence was just easier for me, just because I heard it a lot. The language.
Mm. So, but the thing is, with you coming from Morocco, your parents coming from Morocco, it's got a lot of different languages there, haven't you? Because obviously, I mean, Moroccan isn't. Is Moroccan actually even a language? I mean, it's Arabic, isn't it, more than anything?
So you have Arabic, so that's a national language. You have French as a national language too, mm-hmm. an official language. And then there is this third thing, and it's like the language that was spoken under the Berbers, and it's called Berber.
Yeah.
As we say it in language itself, Temesirt.
Right, okay.
Like first it was like an oppressed part of Morocco, and now they're starting to raise their voice and have like an outcry for, I won't say attention, but just like to acknowledge that they're there, and they are a big part of Morocco too. So now they changed, so they added a third language now too. So now they have three languages in Morocco.
Nice. Excellent. All right, I'm glad you've given me that a bit of education. Done me a favour. Well, look, let's talk about esports and FIFA, because FIFA 20 is about to come out. I know Konami have got the rights for the Juventus name for PES 20.
Yes.
And to be fair, my friend, I'm actually going to buy PES 20 this year. I thought about getting FIFA 20, but after the whole FIFA 19 debacle and all the nonsense that went with that game, I've given up with FIFA. I know you're loyal to that brand and that game. Do you know much about FIFA 20, and will there be many improvements from FIFA 19? Because I know Corey got a lot of stick on social media. Poor guy.
Well, yeah, it's EA in general that is getting a lot of stick by people because of 19. It was actually a bad game. Like nobody can disagree with me. It was a bad game. Mm. But still, they organized different tournaments. They gave a prize pool, which they they're not obliged to, but they still do. And I feel like everything can be better, but still, it's a learning process even for them. And I feel like with FIFA 20 coming up, I had the beta, so I was able to play a little bit. But I can't talk about what I've experienced, but what I've seen and what I've heard. One of the main persons to which opinion I rated very highly after seeing the video was Kurt's video. He made a video about what he felt at Gamescom because Kurt too, he couldn't talk about what happened on the beta. He grinded that game out. But you could talk about the build that was at Gamescom in Cologne, in Germany. So he just took a plane and went there for one day to play the game so his embargo would be lifted and he could talk about it. But I feel like he hit the nail on some things, like passing was a really big issue in FIFA 19, 17, 18 too. I mean, I feel like it was very assisted and now they put it a little bit more manual. So it's more error prone, which will add another level of, I hope, and I'm just going to say like silently because I hope it's going to be like that. I won't be abused, but I hope it raises a little bit the skill gap in the game because there are a lot of players that could just like pass blindly without thinking where they would go and it would just be assisted towards players. So passing improves a lot. Shooting is a little bit more consistent in my opinion, but there's a lot of inconsistency still there. But with time shooting and all the new additions in FIFA 19, I feel like they tried to balance it a little bit more out in FIFA 20 and they did an okay-ish job. The only thing I feel like was bad for me, what I've experienced, was skill moves. That was the only thing that I felt like Kurt wasn't right in his video about, but all the other points were like solid from him too. Yeah, I would say give it a watch too if you want to know the real my real thoughts, because like I said, I can't talk about what I've experienced or what I've felt. But yeah, that's like briefly. I've got good hopes for the game. That's all. I think it can be a good game.
Do you know much about much about PES then? Because I haven't really spoken to anyone about it. I've got a few friends that are eager to see what it's like. I don't even know if there's a demo. I haven't been keeping tabs on it, to be fair. But as I said, I'm more inclined to get PES, not because of the whole license thing, but because I've just given up hope with FIFA.
I've played PES like for a long time. I've played PES 4, which is like basically PES 2004, if I'm not mistaken, okay. Like PES 4, PES 5. Those are the games that I played. I remember playing Pro Evolution Soccer 2008, Pro Evo 17, 18, and 19. But like, I haven't grinded them out. I've just played them once in a while just to have something different and be like, shit, FIFA isn't actually that bad. Because I don't like the gameplay. I feel like it's sluggish and slow, but EA is going on the same route. So I don't know. Maybe in the future, PES will be better than FIFA in terms of gameplay. And I'll see with PES 2020, I might get it and just like see what it holds. Who knows? Maybe it's a good game. And yeah, I just hope that it's a good game. Mm. To be fair, to have like a little bit of rivalry between the two of them, because now EA was just being the bigger player in the market.
Yeah. So tell me something. Now, a lot of people, especially on social media, have been highly critical of FIFA based on what is known as pay to win. Now, what are your views on this? Because I'll tell you this for now. When I was playing Ultimate Team, I had a very, very decent team. And this is before you walloped me on it, by the way. So you walloped me and I had an okay team. But then as time went on, I kind of developed a better team and whatnot. And I didn't really buy any players using actual money itself. But I was coming across players who had much, much better teams, but yeah, I was destroying them. But for some reason, they were getting these fluky little goals. So I don't know whether it's some kind of, cheat in the game that kind of makes people win because they've actually bought players as opposed to people such as myself that haven't. I don't know. What do you reckon?
So I remember when FIFA 18 was at its end, I remember seeing like a few movies about FIFA 19, so before it actually released. And I remember tweeting to Chewboy, I don't know if you know him, the American guy who got signed by Man United as a content creator. Mm-hmm. I remember saying like FIFA 19 will be so pay to win, and that's what I felt because I live in Belgium, so I can't buy FIFA points since January, and I don't buy FIFA points in general. Like, I've got my team, and I've got it right in front of me, and I got players like regular. Like, we're at the end of the game now. I've got a team that people would get like 5 weeks, 2 months in, and they would have this team already. Like, just to give you an idea, I've been playing the whole year just to get to the level where they got like in 1 month or a month and a half, maybe even the week after. I've got two icons, which are Maldini and Ruud Gullit. And other than that, I'm just using the meta players like Virgil van Dijk, Donnarumma, Telles, Richarlison, Mbappe, Di Maria, Neymar, Thiago Mendes. Just to give you an idea, like I've got the OP players, Eden Hazard, yeah, I forgot about him, Mo Salah, Ibrahimovic. Like I've got decent players, and I've got their best version, like that's like team of the season, which are 95 rated out of 100, so they got really good stats. But in the end, it's still no Eusebio, it's no Ronaldo Lima Di Nazario, it's no Cristiano Ronaldo. Those are the things that people buy the first. Like Cristiano Ronaldo was the first buy for almost all pro players. But yeah, I feel like there is some kind of pay to win, but it's hard to explain, but say somebody has a team with Rashford, Vardy, which are good players, they aren't bad. Pace merchants, yeah, but you have to do something. Like there is a way you have to go in FIFA. You just can't be like, oh, I'm going to play an old West Ham team this year. I don't think you're going to make it far unless you're a real pro. And there will be players that have like Ruud Gullit, which is an icon in the real game and in FIFA too. Maldini, Ronaldo Lima Di Nazario, Cristiano Ronaldo. And at that point, you have the advantage of the team. And some people will tell you that they feel like they got a handicap because they got the better players and the game wants to favor the bad player. And then the bad player will say like, no, you got the better players. So it's only normal that when a header happens that you're going to win the header because Ronaldo is stronger, bigger, faster, whatever. But so if we look purely at skill of the player, like if he's good enough to play the game, we will see that they are exactly the same. Then, in my opinion, the one with the better team will always win. Or like 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
So I feel that there is a big difference. And I saw that in qualifiers too, because pros, they are spending from, let's say 1K to 10K on the game. And I feel like it creates a hostile environment. And some people will just be calling out, yeah, you're paid to win. That's why you go to events. That's why you qualify. And I've seen people that spend like more than 10K on the game. They qualified for the events. They got to the events and they got destroyed. And I'm talking about 12-0, 11-0. That's what I'm talking about in two games. So yeah, that's like 6-0 and 5-0 over two games. On the events, everybody gets the same players. You just get an unlocked account. You're not playing with your own accounts.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, there's something I noticed, and you and I were talking about it through WhatsApp a few months ago. I created a team based on silver card players, but in the Swedish league. And I was absolutely hammering teams. And I'm not good at the game. Well, I'm not great. I'm okay at it. But I was absolutely hammering teams. I think I went 14, 15 games unbeaten on Ultimate Team. And then I come across someone who obviously was a better player than me and walloped me. But why do you think that made the difference? Because as I said before, I had a quality team, you know, likes of Dele Alli and Marcus Rashford. They're all gold players. But then I wasn't really getting too far. But then when I had a bang average team made up of Swedish league players, it seemed to work.
It's just because at that point you're... I've been doing challenges too, like getting silver players in Weekend League, which is the most competitive mode inside of FIFA, except for qualifiers then, I think. Maybe division rivals in the top tier divisions, like top of Division 1. But if we're just talking about the game mode itself, I think Weekend League is the most competitive. And I've been playing with silver players for my local team here in Belgium. And I remember playing like Ronaldo Lima Di Nazario, Ruud Gullit, and all the other icons. And I actually beat him. But the thing was, for me, I just had to be so focused on the game. And I was thinking like, okay, I shouldn't be doing crazy flick-ups and do whatever. I just got to play till I'm 100% sure that I'm going to score. And I feel like that's the mentality that you're going in when you know that you got a weaker team. You're just going to be more careful. Whereas if you got a decent team, you're just going to be like, okay, let's see how this game is going to go. I'll focus, but I'm not in the hyper-focus mode. Mm. If you know what I mean. Like, I just feel like people are, when they have a very, I won't say bad team, but a bang average team, like you said, they'll be more aware of things happening around the pitch and seeing lines of players running. So they'll have to, they can't just beat them by outrunning them and dribbling them. They got to think about how they're going to play. And at that point, I think you won already, because some people are just going to be, oh, it's Silva's, easy, we got this. And afterwards, you got the same skill level, but the other one is very focused, so he's going to win. So that's why I'm saying, like, pay to win isn't just a one-way street. It won't win you every single game. It will win you some, and it will make a difference, but some people are just exaggerating in it. And I feel personally that I lose a lot of games because of my team, because I'm losing, like, on one goal difference, whereas some player, and you can see the arrow after the game, you can watch your replays, and you see arrows where the ball is aimed towards, and then you see where the ball actually went.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm like, if I didn't shoot with... I had Payet for a long time in my team. I had, like, those just bang average players. And I felt like if I had not Cristiano Ronaldo or Eusebio or whatever, this would be a goal. And just because I'm using these lesser players, I'm not getting my goals. And that's actually triggering. But at the same time, you're just telling yourself something, so you're sure that you don't have to admit that you are less than that. Like, it's a fairy tale we're telling ourselves, and it has some kind of it's a version of the truth, but not completely true. And I think that's important to take away. Just learn from your mistakes, and that's something that EA should do too. And I feel that they listen to our commentary, because I remember in Berlin talking to, like, the community manager of EA that is looking for the competitive side. And at the end of FIFA, they had restrictions on teams. Like, if you wanted to qualify for events, you had restrictions. A max of 2 players above 94 rated, max 3 icons, things like that, to make the qualifiers more even. And if I heard correctly, and I've just got to say a big if, but I think they're going to do that at the start of FIFA 22. Like, immediately start with those restrictions, which wasn't the case in FIFA 19.
Right. So tell me about yourself now, Dory, because last time we spoke, you know, we were just talking about the game itself and whatnot, but you've done quite a lot of things. I know you've coached Jules Bernard, who is a player at Bundled, I believe, which is owned by Melvin Welfers. You're an expert, apparently. Well, I say apparently, you definitely are. Come on now, I'm joking. And also, you've done some radio work as well, my friend. So you've actually come on leaps and bounds in the past few months.
Yeah, I've done quite a lot. I think I started like in April with actually doing that kind of stuff. Before, I was just helping some friends out, and Gilles is obviously one of those friends that I was helping. And I remember him asking, like, there was this French championship, the E-Ligue 1, He was a player for Lille at the time. Lille and Bundled, they had a relationship together, to work together. But now he quit Lille. But at the time, he was still at Lille, and he was like, yeah, I need a coach for the French championship. It's like the day after tomorrow. Do you feel like coming to Paris? I was like, yeah, sure, why not? What do you want me to do? And he said, just whatever we've been doing, that's just watching my game and, like, telling me when to slow down, when to go faster. Just noticing things that I've missed maybe because I'm focused in the game. And we did so when we got, like, top 3. We went out in the semifinals after beating, like, PSG, Olympique Lyon. We actually eliminated, like, big guys, but still we lost to I won't say a bad player, but it's a lesser play than what I've expected to lose on. But still, it's like semi-finals is decent for a French championship with the likes of Maestro, Mens, Monica. Those are quality players, so I think he did really well. And from there on, I've coached him too at the playoffs, which are like the qualifiers for the World Cup. That was in Berlin. That was also by Lil and Team Bundled. Big shout out to them for having me and giving me the trust that they gave me throughout the year. But I've also been playing myself. I played a school, inter-school competition, like all universities and colleges had like to deliver one player to play for them. That was on FIFA, League of Legends and Hearthstone. I made it into the Belgium final and I've lost to the old player of a Belgian team called Charleroi.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we met in the final and he actually took the win there. So I got second place. Like, I'm just saying this with a quotation, second best college player in Belgium, which is okay-ish, I believe, even though the title doesn't hold a lot. It's just having another event and another thing. And like you said, I've been on the radio, I've passed on television to cast and to analyze the eChampions League, which took place in Madrid. I did that for Belgium television. I've done analyses and expert work for the Belgian league, FIFA league, so the Proximus ePro league. And I've been helping a friend who's who had a FIFA website in French, but he wanted to expand to Dutch too, so we launched a Dutch site there too. So, yeah, a lot of nice things and a lot of very fast. Everything happened very fast, one after the other. So, yeah, I'm actually very positive for next year to see what the future holds.
Good to hear, man, and I wish you the best because, you know, we've known each other for quite a while now, and I've asked a lot of questions, FIFA-related ones, to you, and you've been really good to help out and everything. So, yeah, long may it continue, my friend.
Thank you, man.
Great stuff. All right, well, look, let's talk about Belgian football because it's been a bit of a topsy-turvy start to the season for a lot of teams, especially Anderlecht, who they brought in Vincent Kompany at the beginning of the season as player coach. He's since resigned, but he's still playing. They brought in Simon Davis. I know that he was his assistant coach, and he's the head coach now. Sami Nasri's there. I mean, they're 14th in the table. They won against Standard Liège at the weekend, who are top of the league, and we'll go into them in just a moment. But what do you make of Anderlecht's start to the season? What is going on with Vincent Kompany?
Well, yeah, like they got, like you said, they got Vincent Kompany, Sami Nasri. Now they got Nasser Chadli.
Yep.
Adam not Adam Sandler. How's he called?
It could be Adam Sandler. The way they've been playing, he's a comedian. Philip Sandler, wasn't it from City?
Yeah, Philip Sandler. Exactly. It's like a lot of citizens are going into Anderlecht, and I feel like, to be fair, those are really good. Those are really good transfers, and like they've done a really good job Anderlecht itself. But I've had the opportunity to see them live again because I've said it multiple times, I think, but I'm a fan of Kortrijk, the local team here.
Yep.
And I tend to watch every home game. And one of them this year was the Anderlecht game. I remember going 1-0 down because, like, Chadli, Anderlecht was playing in a 3-5-2, if I'm not mistaken. It was something along those lines, three defenders. They started with four, but the left back would always overlap on the left side and come into Chadli's way. And it's like a very complex style of playing for Anderlecht itself instead of keeping it simple. Mm-hmm. And I feel like since Kompany got there, that they're trying to push that 3-5-2 formation or something, something that's like of that formation. And first half, they really dominated Kortrijk. Like, normally we're a mid-table team that sometimes pushes up to top six. But mostly we are like 6 till 10, something along those lines. We were 1-0 down at halftime. And I remember the game like vividly. I just saw the pass that they were playing. Anderlecht was playing very horizontal. Mm-hmm. Like Chadli got the ball at the left side. He would go to the right side to a very good prospect, Jari Verschaar, a really good player. But still, I feel like they were just doing the same thing over and over again. And you had Michel Vlap, who's a Dutch player. They bought too. And he was always pressing the back line of Kortrijk. So they were playing with a lot of pressure. But once they got the ball, they were slowing the play down. And the coach of Kortrijk actually saw that. And he was like, okay, we got to do something about that. He took his attacking midfielder. He dropped him a little bit. And from there out, he was always intercepting those horizontal passes. And in the end, we won 4-2. Whilst we were 1-0 down at halftime, with obviously a lesser squad. We don't have the talent that they have. But just like putting the pressure on Sandler and company was just the way to go. And like intercepting those passes. And I feel like Anderlecht is playing really good football. They're playing really beautiful too. Like they're trying to pass their way into the goal. Like, let's say Barcelona style almost. But they're just missing that one touch, that one action that will put them further. And the moment that they get scored on, they can't react. Because I think they scored a total of 4 goals in 6 or 7 games.
Mm.
I just got to check up on that. But I feel like, yeah, they won 1-0 against Standard. They lost 1-0 against Genk. They lost 4-2 to us. So that's 3 goals. 0-0 against Mechelen. 0-0 against Mouscron. And I think that's... That's
yeah,
it, right?
They scored 4 goals this season, conceded 7. So, yeah, it hasn't been a great start. I mean, they're fourth from bottom. They're fourth from bottom, yeah. Which is alarming for them.
Yeah, but I think like the way they're playing is actually good. It's just the conversion of the goal. Like they don't score enough, and their defensive work isn't good enough to hold a nil and just grind out a 1-0 victories all the time. But they're working on the future. This year will be a bad year for Anderlecht, like no doubt of that. But I think like next year they're giving a lot of youth of prospects like a chance to show themselves. And I feel like it might be a thing for the future that like next year or the year after, those players will really start breaking out and having like superb years. So I'm positive for the future for Anderlecht. But at this point, it's just like sad to see such a club. Because in the end, I'm not a supporter of Anderlecht, Club Brugge, Standard, or whatever big club. I just like to see beautiful football. And at this point, Anderlecht is pretty good at doing that. But they're just missing somebody to score those goals. And yeah. That's like the main point of criticism that you can give to company. Because I think he's really being a leader. And that the coach player role is just... That's never going to work, in my opinion. If it's company or somebody else, it's never going to work. Like, even Zidane wouldn't be able to pull that off in his prime. I feel like you can't be watching what attackers are doing and at the same time thinking about your position and how you're going to stand and what will happen afterwards. You can't watch everyone at the same time.
Yeah.
So I feel like they're missing out on something, and him resigning as a coach would be like a big step for Anderlecht, I think, to have somebody that actually watched from the sideline and have a better overview of the play. But as a leader, or as like, I won't say official coach, but like people, like a player that's giving instructions to his player on the field, I think he's one of the best in the world.
Yeah, well, you said that they're missing out on a striker. I know they signed the Kemar Roof from Leeds at the beginning of the season, and I don't think he's actually even played the game yet. He's got an ankle injury, hasn't he? So perhaps he could be the player for them, because he scored a lot of goals in the Championship and a lot of big goals as well. I mean, I don't know the difference between the Championship and the Belgian League in terms of quality and what the defenders are like. But if he shows anything like the form he showed at Leeds, he'll be a very, very dangerous player out there. And he's only 26 as well.
Yeah, I think that indeed they just need somebody. At this point, we signed Fraser Hornby from Everton.
Right.
I don't know if you know him. He seems to be one of the youngsters in Scottish football and at the youth Premier League. So for us, that was a decent signing. But I think Anderlecht actually needed it more than we did. if you understand what I mean, like I think that they're just searching and trying out the systems all the time. But in the end, they forget about a player like Roof, who might actually be somebody that makes a difference for the team. But just sticking with Tillin, I thought it was Tillin, the Swedish striker, Isak Tillin. is a Swedish footballer for Anderlecht. But he might be going, or that was the idea, to Club Brugge, and they need a new striker. But still, like, you got Roof. Why don't you actually try and give him some minutes, let him play, see how it goes.
Yeah. I guess they're a bit, I don't know, apprehensive. I don't know. It's just one of those things. But then again, that's down to the manager. And let's see what Simon Davis can do. I mean, he's pretty young as well, but yeah, let's see. Well, look, going from one inexperienced head coach to a very experienced one, Michel Prudhomme, a legend, a Belgian legend. I remember him when he was in goal for the national team playing in the 86 World Cup. He was absolutely fantastic. And as a head coach, he hasn't done too badly. I mean, Standard Liège are top of the league at the moment. The thing is, Dory, I mean, I know they're on 12 points. They're one ahead of Bruges. Do they have what it takes to win their first title since 2009?
No.
That's simple. I mean, they came runners-up last season.
Yeah, but I think like that's just because of the way Standard plays. I think that they're a team that drop points against the lesser teams,
mm-hmm.
a lot of points mostly against the lesser teams. And like for rivalries and derbies, they'd be like on fire and the stadium is crazy. Because I remember, and sorry, I'm going to refrain again to the Kortrijk game. Standard had a Kortrijk game like, I think it was 25th. That's like last week, like not this weekend, but the week before.
Mm-hmm.
We were playing as Clissan, a home stadium of Standard Liège, and Maxime Lestien might be a name that you know. Played for PSV, Club Brugge.
Mm-hmm.
He got signed by Standard, like Anthony Limbombe, who played at Nantes, I believe it was in France. Two very good players, but like there's and Mehdi Karsala. I don't know if that rings a bell.
Yeah.
A Moroccan player who's been really good for the Belgian league. And Maxime Lestien, it took him 23 minutes to get a red card in that game at 0-0. He won, did a Schwalbe, or how do we say it in English? Like pretending to fall
dive. Okay, simulation, yeah. as they call dive. It now. Yeah.
Just a simple simulation got him a first yellow card, and the second yellow card was scoring from a handball from a corner. He got a second yellow and a red in 23 minutes. At that point, Standard was all over Kortrijk. It took us 9 minutes from there, or no, 11 minutes, to score 1-0. Oh, 0-1 for us, because we were the away team. And they only got back at the 82nd minute and 89th minute to score a winner. So I think they got like, at that point, it was the stadium and all the supporters getting behind him. Karsala came on the pitch and he just made a difference. And I feel like the team itself isn't strong enough and they just need those exterior stimulation to do good. If you got to play a game for 60 minutes with 10 men, you just got to do good. Everybody got to do his part of the job and even more than that. And I feel like they're always just... Yeah, hanging on to one or two players and they hope that they do well. And the moment they don't do well, yeah, it's actually lost for them. That's how I feel about the game. And they've been lucky that now Lestien and Limbombe and Karsala all had their one game of really good football, which actually gave them the win. But I think like in the end, it won't be enough to win the championship. I think like... we should be looking at Club Brugge again, and Genk. And I'm gonna say this now, but I think like Mechelen can be a really good team to watch too.
Fair enough. I've got a little bit of a vested interest in Standard because they've got Konstantinos Laiffis, Cypriot central defender. And he's all right. He's 26 years old. He's still got a lot of time to learn. And I think he's at a good team to do so. But what's interesting about Standard is that I know they brought in a Halilovic from Milan on loan. Do you think he'll make much of a difference in this season?
He should. But again, I feel like they're trying to hang on players that should do well, that did well in other leagues and other clubs. And they're just hoping that they do well. And I feel like in the end, you should be improving on all parts of the pitch. And if you look at their defenders, I know they got Noé Dussin, who's a defender for them. who's known for making stupid mistakes and who actually doesn't do too well. They got Bocati, who's a midfielder who's also known for making like those errors and just like, you know, those fouls that you think like, if you do that again and on another day, that might be a red card, but now it isn't even a foul.
Mm.
Like those kind of things. Like Leifert is one of the best defenders that they got, and they should be happy because with Leifert and the come of Selim Amala, they actually had like some players that could improve on positions that they didn't have a good player before. But then on the wings, if you look at the wings, they got Anthony Limbombe, Mehdi Karsala, they got Mpoku. Those are all players that are actually really good, but they're all playing in the same position. So
yeah.
you gotta swap them out, and you can't play them all. And I feel like they gotta improve on the positions that are actually on the pitch at that time, and that were defenders. So I think that's the main point with Anderlecht. They got a really good, like, Zinho van Heusden, who used to play at Inter Milan, Internazionale. He's a quality player, too. He's a young prospect, too. They got Avenatti, who's a striker that played at Kortrijk, who scored, like, 20 goals.
He's injured at the moment, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. But I feel like they really got a good squad, but they're always playing, like, those players that I think, like, please put somebody else in that position, because at this point, you're just cutting into your own. In Dutch, we say cutting into your own hands.
Yeah.
Like you're just injuring yourself by doing this. You're trying to give them a podium to perform, but they're just losing your points at this point.
Mm, absolutely.
And I feel that's got to change for them.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, Club Brugge, or Brugge, as they're also known as, they made a big signing in Simon Mignolet, and that was a bit of a I don't know, an eyebrow-raising moment, because no one really rates Simon Mignolet, to be fair. But I think he became the most expensive goalkeeper in Belgium. And also they signed Eder Balanta, the Colombian central defender from FC Basel, a guy who Tim Vickery really rated when the lad was 16, 17 years old. But the guy's 26 years old now, and he hasn't really, gone to the level that he perhaps should have. Why are Bruges the favourites for the title?
For me personally, it's just the every player can be replaced by another player, and they won't lose too much of quality in that position. Simon Mignolet, like you said, he isn't rated a lot, but still, if you watch how he played and actually got, if he actually gets like, confidence of the coach, and when he can actually play, he's actually not that bad of a goalkeeper. And people will slaughter me for saying this because he makes horrible mistakes.
Uh-huh.
But if there is one thing that Club Brugge... For me, it's difficult to say Club Brugge because in the end, we say Club Brugge. And surely for somebody from West Flanders, it's really hard. But if they have one problem, it was goalkeepers. Their goalkeepers, I think they switched... One season, they have switched for 6 goalkeepers or 7.
Wow.
Even. Like, in one season, 7 different goalkeepers. That's huge. But I feel like with Mignolet, it's just like, he's the number one. There is no doubt about that. From all the players they have, he's number one, and he's going to do it. And like you said, they got a lot of players. I'm watching now, and I see Okereke, who has been really good. Dennis, who is coming off the bench most of the times, and he's doing those crazy dribbles and just like making the action and crossing it to Okereke, who's a big player. They got Luis Openda. Openda isn't rated as a player amongst the international public, but I feel like he's actually somebody that might grow into a player for like sub-top in Serie A. I won't say AS Roma or Lazio Roma. Maybe Lazio Roma would be a team that he might actually function in. I feel like that's like
AS Roma. Roma just seems to be buying Man United rejects. I mean, it looks like they're getting Mkhitaryan today, and they've got Chris Smalling already. So
yeah, they also bought Kalinic are like on a season loan now,
mm-hmm.
I believe.
Yeah,
the striker from Atletico Madrid. So yeah, they're just doing like weird business. But about that, I think. They actually done a good business. It's weird, but I think Mkhitaryan is going to do damage, just like Alexis Sanchez is going to do damage to Milan.
I agree. And see, this is the thing. I've been Mkhitaryan's biggest critic, but I think Serie A will suit him right down to a T. It's so much more different than the Premier League. I know, I think it's technically better, but it's physically less demanding.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like now with I watched the North London Derby yesterday, and I could see what he was thinking, and I could sense what he would have wanted to do, like when he was on the wing. And the wing isn't just a position for Mkhitaryan. I think you got to play him at centre mid, centre attacking mid, and from there on he will do the damage that he can, because his technical ability is actually really good. And I think he just got to need to give him that confidence again and just let him play. And maybe the first 2 weeks won't be too big, but I'm sure that he's going to grow into it. And he might actually do really well. And with the team that AS Roma got, I don't think they could have bought like any player worse than they have on the squad already. I actually don't rate Juan Jesus, the centre-back of Roma. So yeah, I think like with Smalling, it will be an injection in quality into the team. That's AS Roma, of course, but I feel like in Serie A there's a lot of it's a different way of thinking too. They're always trying to. What I sense is defense is really strong in the Serie A with the likes of Chiellini, De Ligt now, who's played horrible, but okay. Bonucci and all the other centre-backs who are actually really good, and the Serie A has been rated for a good defence. But I feel like players like Kalinic and Mkhitaryan and Alexis Sanchez can really do damage to those defenders.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a really good thing for them that they signed those kind of players, although they are rejects at Man United.
Yeah. Well, look, I know we didn't really talk much about Bruges, but I want to talk about Romelu Lukaku. Because at United, he wasn't a great signing. Look, when he joined us, I said, look, at the end of the day, at the time, we spent a big amount of money. But when you look at his goal-scoring record in comparison to all the other strikers, apart from Harry Kane and Sergio Aguero, he was probably the most consistent or the most prolific goal-scorer in the Premier League at the time. So when United signed him, it made sense. Because the other two weren't available and they wouldn't have joined United. He didn't have a great time at the club. But he's gone to Inter. He scored 2 goals in his first 2 games. But last night, he was subjected to a lot of racial abuse by the Cagliari fans. Now, as you're probably aware, Cagliari are notorious for this. I mean, they've done it to Samuel Eto'o. They've done it to other players. Who did it? So the Moise Kean last season. How do you think he will do in Serie A? And on top of that, how do you think he will react again to that abuse? Because it's going to happen, isn't it?
It's going to happen and it's going to keep happening. We saw it in the Premier League. Like I feel like the last few weeks, the players have actually been talking about it and posting about it. And then I'm talking about the Pogba incident. Like on social media, you saw a lot of hate towards with a lot of slang words. And yeah, you saw the N-word, for example, a lot. And I feel like if you see that, for me, I cringe a little bit. Thinking that people actually think that way and are that ignorant towards a player. I don't know. Don't they have a black player in their squad? Because if you're making those noises to black players of the opposite squad, you're just doing the same towards your own players and you're not supporting them. Yet if they score a goal, they will be the first to celebrate it. So I feel like they're hypocrites. And at the same time, I feel sorry for them for thinking that way. Mm. And that's for Pogba, that's for Eto'o, that has been for Patrice Evra, who had been subject to racism too. Moise Kean, like everybody. And I feel like the more we're watching it and the more it happens, the more players actually start talking about it. And yeah, I feel like Lukaku's going to raise above it and he's just going to silence the whole league. I really think he's going to be league top scorer. I'm going to tell you that right now. Even with the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo, I still think Lukaku is going to score more than Ronaldo, which is actually a very serious thing to say. But yeah, I think he's perfect fit for another club because he shouldn't have stayed at Man United that long. He he was just getting abused by everybody, calling him donkey or whatever it was. And yes, he done stupid things at United. His first touch was actually horrible during the time at United. But I feel like in the end, he scored a lot of goals, important goals. Maybe not that important to United fans, but in the end, important for people who are watching it from a side, like neutral fans. I think Lukaku deserves more credit for what he's done and that he's being ridiculed for playing bad for two seasons. But I think that's part of growing and being a striker. And I hope for him that that he does really well in internationally and show everybody that he's actually worth it. And same goes for when I was watching Lukaku on the national team, the Red Devils, the Belgium national team.
Yep.
I was watching him during the World Cup and I saw the patterns that he was running at and the way he was maneuvering. And the moment you start watching that, you're thinking, why don't you do that at United? And then we come to the point, like, you got to do that with Alexis Sanchez on the wing and Rashford on the wing. And in the end, I just think he was subjected to having a bad team around him. And he's not the best player in the world, of course, but I feel like give him better players around him, he scores so many more goals and he'll create space and he'll actually have a good season. Yeah. And even at Internazionale, he doesn't have the best players around him, but the level is just different.
Well, he's more powerful than the central defenders there. You know, it's not just the pace that he possesses. He's good off the ball. Okay, his first touch is dreadful. But the thing is, when it comes to overpowering defenders, he will absolutely bully teams out there. It's kind of how Drogba used to be in the Premier League. You know, no one really knew how to cope with him. You know, so I think Lukaku will be fantastic out there. So yeah, but staying with Lukaku and Belgium itself, this whole racial abuse thing, has that really made the news out there? Is that something that people are talking about?
I've seen it on social media a lot, so but that's more like international. But to be fair, I'm not following the Belgian news channels because I'm just watching like my own team and start to watch like I won't say highlights, but I will watch other games. But in the end, I don't rate too much of the Belgian analysts and analysts and like people that are calling themselves experts on international game on international games. But still, I know there's gonna be a lot of uproar about it, but still, Belgium is a racist country, so
they might actually
agree. Yeah, the far right party's got like 40% in the two far rights got like 30% 40% in last.
Wow!
In the last voting round, so I think like and the things I've known as a Moroccan person myself, I've always gone to Catholic schools and always even as a Muslim. And I feel like, it's hard, and people actually call him names and still give him won't cut him slack, even though he's done so much for the Belgian football and for everything around it. And still, people forget that. Like at that point, they'll be celebrating, and the minute after, when they see somebody black, they will be calling them out. I feel like there's a lot of hypocrisy in football. And that will never change, I think. And I hope it does, but I don't have good hopes for that.
It's a shame. Well, a couple of quick things before I let you go, mate. First of all, Divock Origi had a fantastic season for Liverpool last year, scoring in the Champions League final. In fact, he got a lot of important goals for Jurgen Klopp's men. And also, Adnan Januzaj. Now, I want to talk briefly about this guy, because when I was at United, a lot of people praised him. They really rated him highly. We saw him doing really, really well in the reserves. Came into the first team under David Moyes. He had a few good games, but then Van Gaal came in, loaned him out to Dortmund, didn't seem to work out, and now he's at Sociedad. And then again, he seems to be going backwards. He's 24 years old, so he's still young, but do you have much hope for Januzaj?
I think he got to change the team again. I feel like the Spanish division isn't his division to play in, just like the Premier League isn't a division he should play in. I feel like he's more fit for Dutch or French football. That's what I feel. in his way of dribbling. And I don't know, I felt like from when he's standing completely still and he has the ball, he has this amazing vision of what's going to happen. But, I don't know. I feel like Jan Uzay is a player that I actually was thinking would... He actually got my hopes up. And I thought he would be better than Kevin De Bruyne because I saw him like at a young age when he was still playing at Anderlecht. I actually saw a few of his games. He's 2 years older than me. And I've played some games against Anderlecht at that time. People were talking about him. Even when he was playing at Brussels, people were talking about him already for being like a gifted player and like being really good. So I have my hopes up, but he hasn't shown it. But yeah, we saw Vardy come out of nowhere all of a sudden and have an amazing season. So why not for Jan Uzay?
Absolutely. And what about Origi then? Because he seems to be low down in the pecking order when it comes to the Belgian national team. Obviously, Lukaku's going to be the number one striker. Dries Mertens is another fantastic talent. And then you've got Batshuayi and Benteke. Where does Origi sit in the Dutch squad? In the Belgian squad, sorry. But Dutch squad. Belgian squad.
For me personally, I think Origi is a massive player for Belgium. When he comes on, he's always dangerous. And the same thing for Batshuayi. I actually love Batshuayi. I love how he plays. I love his way of movement on the pitch, being a little bit crazy. But I think most of the things, like Origi actually did the right thing with his moves. Going to Liverpool was at the right time. If you know what I mean, like people leave very early if they're young. They leave their squads and go to somewhere else.
Yeah.
But he's been playing a lot in Belgium first. Like he played at Houthal and Harrobeek, Genk. From Genk, he went to Lille, went to the B squad. That was youth. Then he went to the B squad of Lille, Liverpool, Lille again, Wolfsburg. He's been a bit everywhere. And he's actually pretty young still. He's born in Kortrijk, so he's born like right next door. He's born in my city.
Ah, so that's why you like him.
No, but Origi has always been someone at the time. I think hasn't he played with Hazard at Lille?
Possibly.
Or was it right after? Possibly. I don't know if he was playing with Hazard or just like right after or right before. But I think it was right after. But I liked his technique. He's so good on the ball. And again, if you watch that goal in the Champions League final, you just see how driven he is. Even when he didn't play at all, he'd come on and he'd score. And that's what I actually rate in a striker, that even when you're not picked and you're at the bottom of the pecking order, and you still got that hunger to score a goal and actually show everybody that they're wrong instead of being like, yeah, I don't mind. Yeah, whatever, we're going to see. You got some of those strikers who just become lazy when they're coming off the bench. And he's somebody that's always driven to score. And I remember the goal at Everton when I'm thinking about the name now. Pickford actually dropped that ball on the crossbar and it came back to him. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, the last minute, 96th minute goal. But he was at the right place at the right time. And that's what strikers are meant to do. That's their job.
And I feel like at that point he was just still believing in a chance to score, and that's what's making him a joy to watch for me. Just somebody that actually wants to score, wants to do his best, even when he is not first choice. Just like Batshuayi, how many teams has he been to? He's played at
quite a few.
Standard, Anderlecht, Standard again, Olympic Marseille, Chelsea, Dortmund, Valencia, Crystal Palace. Once again, that he's like, wait, how old is he now? He's 20, no, not 23. 93, so he's 26 years old. Mm. Yeah, 26 years old. And still, I feel that's young for a striker. I feel like strikers are like, when they're actually really good and have the vision that Batshuayi and Origi have, I think they can go a long way.
Yeah. But with Batshuayi, apparently was offered to Napoli, but they chose Llorente because he was free. So, again, I don't know what's happening with Batshuayi, to be fair, at Chelsea, because, again, as you've mentioned, he's played for so many different teams. And he did all right at Valencia and Dortmund, but it's just that when he comes to the Premier League, he's not consistent enough, and he doesn't do enough off the ball either.
I think it's the same thing with Lukaku and Kevin De Bruyne when they were at Chelsea. I feel that Chelsea isn't fit for him, just like they made the error with Lukaku and Kevin De Bruyne to let them go. I feel like they did the same thing, or they're going to do the same thing with Batshuayi. They aren't using him at the right time, giving him the right tools to actually, progress into his own career.
Yeah,
they're just like, yeah, they just demand from him to score at that point, and he isn't at that that level to just make the difference like Harry Kane or Aguero can do. And I think that's what they're hoping of him. And the pressure is like a big thing. Like when you saw him at Olympique Marseille, he was having bang of a season. His first season, he was like he was a substitute. Then Gignac left the club, and he just came in, and I don't know what happened. He scored like 17 or 18 goals for a player that was like, at that point, I believe he was 20 years old or 19.
Yeah.
So I felt like at that point, it's like a little bit of what Rashford did at Man United, come into the squad and just break everything. And he signed for Chelsea, and I was like, okay, let's go. We got Lukaku, we got Benteke, we got Batshuayi. Those are all good players in the Premier League who are doing well. And I felt bad for him because it wasn't working. Then he went to Dortmund, and I was so happy. I was watching him, and I was just being so happy for him that he actually found the pleasure to play again. I don't know how many games he got. He played 10 games. I just got the stats right in front of me. Right, 14 games in total for Dortmund, and he scored 9 times. And I remember seeing those goals, and I was actually left with my mouth open, and I really hoped that Dortmund would have bought him, but he went back to Chelsea. Valencia wasn't too bad, but I feel like that Valencia at that time wasn't good enough once again. And Crystal Palace, he was okay-ish again. Not really the height he went to at Dortmund. But I felt like Dortmund at that point would have been the perfect choice to stay at Dortmund.
Mm.
But yeah, that didn't work out.
Well, let's see what's in store for these players, because the transfer window in Europe closes today. So it'll be very, very interesting to see if he will stay at Chelsea or if he goes abroad. Well, Dory, listen, mate, thank you ever so much for joining me, man. Really, really appreciate it. Before I let you go, let our listeners know your Twitter handle and how else they can get hold of you.
They can get me on underscore Mr. Dory, MrDorei. And yeah, just if you drop me a message on there or just add me in a thing, I'm almost replying to everything
except Mr. Popular.
No, but I mean, like, people will give me like questions that are like completely different off football or FIFA, just something. Yeah, completely random, and I will still give my opinion about it, like, no problem. Just when I see you're a bot or you're not a genuine person, I will just leave it be. yeah, same thing, like, all my information is on there if you want to hit me with an email or, yeah, whatever. Just let me know if you got some discussions. I'm always up to have a talk and explain what I'm thinking, why I'm thinking it. And I actually like having a good discussion with people and just talk about whatever.
Superb. Well, mate, thank you very much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. And we'll be sure to do this again soon, man.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, let's hope so.
Brilliant. Excellent. Right, guys, we're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. Please feel free to give us a follow. And if you've got any questions for Mr. Dory, fire them over to him. He'll answer. So until next time, take care.